Travel presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with John Malinczak, who's the president and CEO of NAMM, which is the National Association of Music Merchants. In our conversation, John talks about living in Carlsbad, which is the headquarters for NAMM, and he tells us a bit about being a licensed sea captain and teaching sailing as a hobby. John takes us through his musical education, studying in Virginia and Louisiana as a dual major in both music and education. And John describes his role at NAMM, and he discusses his former role at Hal Leonard, where he worked in musical education and technology. John tells us about some of the challenges that NAMM and the music merchants face during the current economic and political climate regarding trade and tariffs. John discusses the band instrument program in school and how those instruments are delivered. And John talks about the NAMM show in Anaheim, its future, its online presence, and influencers. Finally, John talks about his instrument, trumpet, and his Martin acoustic, and a little more about sailing. To find out more about John and NAMM and the NAMM show, you can go to the NAMM website, NAMM.org. That's NAMM.org. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Oh, and hey, if you want to support the show, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/HaveGuitarWillTravelPodcast. Here's my buddy, John.
Hey there, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You're podcasting between gigs, my friend.
Where are you located?
Carlsbad.
Oh, Carlsbad. Is that where NAMM, the offices are?
Yeah, our headquarters is here in Carlsbad, just an hour south of Anaheim.
Sure, sure. On the beach.
Yes, it's not that far from the beach. Yeah. I might be able to see it right now.
Okay. All right. And you are a licensed sea captain?
I am, actually. A little side hobby.
And what is your boat?
I teach sailing, so I worked at a few different schools, and I usually do like bigger boats, like 40, 45 foot boats. But I can teach sailing any size offshore, kind of like offshore stuff.
Uh-huh. And are they, sorry to start with non-musical stuff, but are they fiberglass bodies? Or are they wood bodies?
Mostly fiberglass. I mean, I've been on some of those old, beautiful wood boats are just gorgeous, but everything now is fiberglass, you know, cruising boats, that type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You sail, or you?
I don't, but my bass player actually owns one of Leo Fender's old wood boats, 44
really?
Foot. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'd love to get out on that thing.
It's up here in Napa. So you say all you have to do is take a short drive to Napa and you're.
Is it really?
Yep. Golden.
I'm up in Napa every once in a while.
Okay. Give me a call. We'll work it out.
That's super cool. What a beautiful. I know Leo Fender was a sailor, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think over his course of yachting, he had 7 different boats.
Good for him.
And would take
Good
them,
for him.
And he would take his friends out to Catalina from, I don't know where he left from, but out to Catalina.
I mean, he was out in L.A., so it's an easy trip from Long Beach or Marina Del Rey or any of those areas out there. So that's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that about you. That's a good fact.
What's your instrument?
Trumpet's my main instrument.
Okay. Right on. And you went to Virginia Commonwealth?
For my undergrad, and then LSU for my graduate degrees.
Okay. And did you study... I mean, were you studying when you were in high school? Obviously, you must have been.
Oh, yeah. I was a music nerd the whole time. Like, always a music nerd. And then majored in music and education. I have a dual degree. But
oh, right on. Excellent. And why not Berkeley?
Huh?
Why not Berkeley?
Oh, because I couldn't afford it. Are you kidding? I needed a scholarship in a state school.
And how long have you been in representing NAMM?
3.5 years. April of 23.
And is it moving from Hal Leonard, is a huge challenge?
It's just a different gig altogether, man. It's a totally different gig.
Is it a lot of herding cats?
It depends on the time of year. I mean, at the NAMM show, yeah, we call them attendees, but they're a lot of herding those folks. It's definitely a lot of plates spinning at all times.
Uh-huh.
You know, you always try to be proactive, but we have to be reactive. And so, like, you know, global tariffs were not on our strategic plan.
Sure.
You know, that's not like a proactive thing we do. But, you know, like the Department of Ed, music advocacy is always something we do, but of course you have to kind of pivot. So it's a lot of pivoting. I mean, it's interesting. My first 3 years here have been at a time when a lot changes really fast. There are times in the industry, like you look, 2011 to 2020 to 2019.
Yeah.
Chugga, 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 chugga. Right? Tell me any like financial crisis, war, like, I mean, things are, you know, and even different times in history, things are going along. But then obviously COVID, I started kind of in the middle because I consider COVID all the way through basically 24 for our industry. 21 to into 24 was our industry's like,
yeah.
But you've had COVID, you have tariff wars, you know, like it's been a lot of, you know, inflation, some really serious political, you know, divide stuff. You'd had, you know, some things that have just really affected our society. Yeah. International tourism completely dropped last year. Yeah. Canadian tourism, as of 2 days ago, you know, I mean, the Canadians are now actively saying don't go to the U.S. So it's just an interesting time. I'd love to have a few peaceful years, but we'll get there. Right?
Well, at Hell Leonard, what did you do?
My last job was vice president of music education and technology.
Okay.
I was in charge of basically all technology platforms and softwares that were teaching tools, which was several, and then global music education strategy. Uh-huh. Really aligning. I didn't do publishing, was not my background, but I was the one working on the software, but also aligning our strategies between marketing, publishing, the tech stuff, inside sales, dealers, the distribution around music education in general. Like, what does a school district need from Hal Leonard?
Yeah.
They need product distribution, they need dealer support, they need publications, they need software, they need technology, they need clinicians. And so we were aligning all of that.
Is there a part of the country where music education in the schools is still full force, or is it all? I only know California,
There's pockets throughout the whole country. There really are. You know, as you'd expect, like it always falls around affluent communities. I mean, it's a have and have not situation, and every state in the U.S. has that. Uh-huh. You know, you get like. Inner city always has their kind of urban issues. Urban and rural are where sometimes generally the funding's less, but like, you know, affluent, suburban, those areas, you have a lot of funding and support. Depends on how the states fund their education programs, which every state has a little different formula, whether it's property taxes, sales tax, bonds, et cetera. But there's shining examples in every state and there's challenges in every state.
Sure. And does NAM, I mean, is NAM proactive trying to get communities to encourage music education?
Yeah, we have a really, really popular Best Community for Music Education program that we award over 1,000 districts. And that's, we've even started to do monetary awards to districts in needs for who are like exemplary examples of music education to sort of like shine the light on what is possible when a community supports music in a higher way. We fund, you know, 57 other grant projects that support music education and learning and instrument learning, and through all industry segments. We do a support music policy where we align all the states on different issues that could affect. I mean, right now it's with the federal government being very vocal about we don't need a Department of Education, everything should be local at the states. Yeah. Our work is a little trickier because we have to do our work 50 times. And if you break it up into the local communities in every state, we almost have to do our work like 500 times.
Wow.
So building like a kind of an army of allies and the local retailer, maybe it's a manufacturer that has, you know, that's in the community, but finding NAM members in the community and teaching them to be active in their community. Uh-huh. So yeah, it's a big part of what we do.
Yeah. As far as the mom and pop shops that we knew when we were kids growing up, maybe more me than you, but is there an area where those still exist? I mean, here where I am, they've pretty much all gone out of business.
I mean, they're two have closed since we started talking, my friend. Like, it's it's tough. It's tough on that business. And a lot of it is, you know, times have changed. You know, I'll tell you where they do well is the specialty. So, you know, specialty, whether it's drums, like even like Portsmouth drums, like, you know, or like you get like some of the specialty guitar, like high end specialized. You know, think about why people need to come in, get a repair, get a, like, find a custom instrument, need local knowledge and really to connect. What we've lost, and not just in music, in fashion, I mean, we've lost the sort of, like, mid department store model where, you know, I mean, there's even, like, on the JCPenney, Sears, you don't see those anymore. Like, either I need to go to the outlet mall and go to, you know, Banana Republic for a very specific thing that I want from them, or I'm going to get it online. And it's the same with music. School music dealers still exist. I mean, that's where it's strong because it's a rental service.
Sure.
It's a rental repair service, you know?
Yeah. That's actually what I was going to ask you. So band instruments, brass instruments and woodwinds, there are outlets for that. Being of the age I am, I don't see them. Just because, you know, there's none down the street from my house. Where do kids go? Is there like a list of suppliers?
Yeah, there's someone serving a lot of it. To be honest, it's like a central physical location, and then it's road reps. It's vans that go straight to the school, service the school directly.
Oh, wow.
Especially more rural areas. Like I bet where you are, if you're up in the Napa area, that kind of you probably have a local dealer that's putting several hundred miles on the van every week.
Yeah. And is the band system in the high schools and schools, is it still pretty strong?
It's stable. Yeah, you know, it is, and there's always the hair on fire, cuts are coming. There's always the challenges with scheduling. The kids that need to do music are also generally the kids that need to do the AP courses and all of that. So you always have that sort of scheduling. But all that to say, statistically, we've been pretty strong. 49% of students in the United States participate in music education programs on average. So that's pretty good.
And as far as the show, the Global Music Gathering, is it moving toward a digital, basically a digital show, or is it always going to be in Anaheim?
It's always going to be in Anaheim. I'll tell you, the need for the physical touch point is actually more important right now because honestly, you know, with all the online or people are connecting online and they you know, people don't know who to trust anymore. And I think even having the we call it the greatest gathering of human intelligence in the industry. And that physical touch point of coming and like seeing the product, meeting the company in person and getting a sense for like, and I think it's really finding its purpose in the physical area because you can see a brand's marketing campaign, you can see a brand's YouTube, you see a brand's website.
Sure.
You can engage with the brand through their social platforms, but you want to go meet their people. You want to go stand in their booth. You want to go talk to their product managers. You want to go have a meeting. You'll press the flesh. That's becoming more valuable, and NAMM's the only place left to do that.
Yeah.
In addition to that, yeah, we have increased our digital presence because we've also found that people really want to see what's new at NAMM or what's at NAMM. So. Yeah. The ability for our app and our new sort of like we have a ton more digital resources, but it's in addition to the growth of the physical.
Sure.
It's not digital. I mean, the power of the NAMM show will never be digital. It's always going to be Anaheim.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if during COVID, you know, there was a revelation that, hey, maybe we could do this online.
Well, there was the Believe in Music Week in 2021 when there, you know, California did not allow physical gatherings.
Sure.
But you can't do it online. You can't get that many people together and have that energy. There's no energy online. There's no buzz. And, you know, the noise of the hall, there's no walking around. There's no experience. Yeah. No. It's a much needed event.
Yeah, for sure. And as the Guitar Builder Showcase, and is there any plan on
Boutique Guitar? Yeah. That grows out. This 10th anniversary last year, we're going to year 11.
Uh-huh.
Continues to get more and more boutique builders in there. I mean, Jamie does a great job of nurturing that.
Yeah. Any plans to expand it to other, like, you know, maybe like sound healing, you know, like a showcase for sound healers and stuff like that?
We have more and more of those products. Actually, sensory. So Diodario, I'll give you exact. Diodario just added a second booth for sensory percussion.
Oh, wow.
Right. And Meinl actually added, Meinl did a big booth last year, and they're doing it again this year, and they're bringing their whole like sensory healing percussion as well. So we actually see that as a growing area.
And as far as, you know, the whole, the global situation with the trade and everything like that, are those companies coming back, you know, for 27, are they coming back?
Yeah, on the exhibitor side, for sure. I mean, we have a good sense of the exhibitors now because most have already booked.
Yeah.
We're definitely seeing the international exhibitor piece rebound. I mean, we remain strong in that. 2026 was a slight dip in the international exhibitors for, you know, to be honest, partly like the cost of doing business in the U.S. became so high with tariffs. There was like an interest of like, well, I don't want to like, you know, focus on the U.S. right now. But part of it was also political, and some of the rhetoric throughout 25 against other countries just made certain people kind of like not want to support the U.S. and not travel to the U.S. And that was a little unfortunate, out of our control, obviously. But so far, we're tracking up. We just opened member registration last week, so I'm 1 week in. It's very, very, very early. But we're tracking to 2025 levels already.
And as far, I mean, you're very closer to the tariff situation than I'll ever be. Is there any relief in sight?
I mean, a lot of companies did get their IEEPA refunds. So that is, and most of them are using them to reinvest and add, you know, additional marketing, additional, you know, resources in there. So that money is being immediately reinvested, which is good to see.
Yeah.
We know that the Section 122 tariffs that were there for another 10% for 150 days, those have already been overturned by the Court of National Trade. Those will certainly go to the Supreme Court. We don't know when.
Yeah.
They're kind of coming back from their summer recess. So we'll see when they pick that case up. But there's an expectation that those might actually be overturned and end up with a refund process. So that would, of course, lead that. But as far as adding new tariffs and using tariffs as the weapon of choice in international negotiation, we don't see any slowdown in the administration's choosing of I'm going to tariff you. Tariffing and renaming bodies of water seem to be the two most popular mechanisms that they have. So sadly, the courts have caught up, but we shall see what comes next. I mean, even the mechanism on Canada, and Canada is, of course, digging in right now really hard.
Yeah.
Kind of the first time we've seen a country like walk away from the table and say, nope, we're going to fight this for the long term. So it's an interesting, it's the first time we've really seen like someone say, I'm not doing this anymore. So I hope that doesn't escalate further.
Yeah.
Because then it could lead to more retaliatory tariffs, which of course hurt American businesses a lot.
Sure.
But having said that, even the mechanism that is used to do the tariffs on Canada, the Section 338, that's 100-year-old law that's never been implemented before. It's like it will most certainly go to the courts.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yep. And could you speak a little bit about AI? I mean, on a completely different subject, AI and NAM?
Yeah, so AI, we see in three areas. You know, there's AI as a business tool. And that's a lot of part we do with like NAM retail education, NAM marketing summit. I mean, AI will be a big piece of all of that because a lot of what we do at the NAM show is business education.
Sure.
And so AI falls into that because one of the things we've seen is AI can allow a small business to punch above their weight really fast in the amount of analytics, data, speed at which their people can do tasks. It's a tool that speeds humans up. And I think that's what we got to remember. And so the business education side, we do see companies embracing AI, especially smaller companies getting, you know, more advantages that basically having bigger companies with larger staff just have more people to do things. Smaller companies can fight back now, which is creating a really healthy competitive environment.
Absolutely.
Then you see AI in music production, music creation, your Tunies, your different AI generated apps. You know, we're a product organization, not an artist organization, but it definitely falls into that. because obviously artist rights, unethical use of AI, copyright infringement. Uh-huh. So AI for artists, there'll be some topics on that for sure, because we're really leaning into what we can do for all the artists at the NAMM show.
Yeah.
But the third area, which is also more interesting, is AI and product development.
Yeah.
And that's becoming more and more. I mean, you have more AI and like modeling, more AI tools for music learning, where you can like AI can take tunes apart and create multi-track experiences really fast. AI as far as like the ability to create prototypes faster.
Sure.
Prototype an idea in a manufacturer setting and have AI bust out a CAD and 3D print something really fast.
Yeah.
Like the ability to use those tools to just prototype and model is definitely speeding up manufacturing. AI in recording software is going to be a real game changer.
Sure. Yeah.
It's already been there. I mean, actually AI, you know, they call them plugins, but you know, but modeling is going to become more and more a problem. And as we see that too, like different things of like AI can go, and there's crossover. So AI used to create a song, now create a song and make the guitar sound like a 57 Strat played through a Marshall with an Earthquaker pedal. And suddenly it's like, well, wait a minute, do we have permission to model those?
Sure.
But even how do you create those models? Remember all the sound sample time? Like sound samples were like rent a studio.
Yeah.
Boing, pluck a note, record it, and then pluck the next note. I mean, the sound sample recordings were tedious, sure, right? Yeah. All the sounds we bought. And now AI can just model that stuff. So it's a little disruptive on that side, but like everything else, you know, is it the Lindrum? Is everyone going to get mad at it, start using it? Is it going to be a museum in 2 years? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say. It's definitely hard to say. You're closer to it than I am, but it is definitely hard to say. And when was your first NAMM show?
My first NAMM show was 2013.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a baby. And I had been, because I, you know, I was a teacher and a performer, and I got in the industry a little later because I was teaching music technology, and that was something like no one else was doing. And then I kind of was in Louisiana, and I went to like, met some people at PreSonus and just said, hey, you know, like, is PreSonus interested in, you know, getting involved here? And they were actually talking about market expansion. They had their first round of the Studio Live Mixer and had a lot of success and were seeing like rapid double-digit growth. Uh-huh. And they were definitely in a market expansion investment phase. And so I was hired to bring, like, to basically start, I was the division, uh-huh, but to start the, you know, PreSonus EDU.
Wow.
Get PreSonus education out. And that was a real major learning moment. But I started January 1, and they said, pack your bags, you're going to the NAMM show. So that's where every good idea starts, right?
Yeah. And you were there through the craziness up through 2019.
Yeah, through all the big ones. Yeah, we were through all of them. The big double-decker, triple-decker booths. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole craziness.
And it slowly, I think it's getting back there.
It is. Yeah. We're seeing more and more companies come back to that, like, size. Exactly. Like that, the product showcase piece of it, you know? And I think, you know, the challenge is that when there was no NAMM show for 21,
yeah,
and quite frankly, 22 was in June, and it didn't work for a lot of companies.
Sure.
Very small event. April of 23, again, didn't work for a lot of companies. So it's been, you know, once companies take the NAMM show out of their budgets for 3 years, uh-huh, they have to add it back in. And so they sort of add it back in slowly. But every year we see growth, growth, growth. And when the map goes live on September 23rd, you're going to see the booth sizes once again,
yeah,
picking up.
Right on. And for NAMM week, do you have to buy, is there one meal that you have to buy, or one cup of coffee, or one beverage?
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Oh my God. I don't know if I eat at NAMM week. I, you know, it's funny. I'll tell you the truth, James, like at, for me personally, when I used to go there, I used to love the food trucks. That was always my fun. Like that was, it's better than the hotel food.
Sure.
Definitely better than the convention food. But like, I used to love checking the food trucks out, but you have to go at like 3:30 in the afternoon at a weird time because like, yeah, you're never going to beat the lunch rush.
No.
But I'll tell you that like now, it's like a NASCAR pit stop. Like there are John stations that my staff has in between my, like all the routes I have to walk to go to all the events I go to.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like bananas. I like mixed nuts. I like seltzer water. I like granola bars. And they have a little like John bags of my favorite power bars, granola bars. And I'll walk in a room and they will feed me a banana, give me a seltzer, feed me some granola, and check my hair. They actually powder my face because there's so many pictures. They don't want me to shine.
Yeah, yeah.
And send me out. So I'm literally like walking in a room and it's like, vroom, 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 vroom. All right, send me back out. Like, it's all day.
But I also picture you going to a lot of like the tech awards and stuff like that and being fed, you know.
You know what's like funny? I go to those. I never eat.
Because
I'm working. Like everyone wants to talk to me and I want to talk to everyone. Uh-huh. So I was table to table to table. And it's really hard to like try to take a bite and like, oh, how are you? Good to meet you. You know, so I generally lose a few pounds during the name show because I'm walking 14,000 steps and I'm eating 1,400 calories.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. For sure. And so apart from the NAMM show, like, you know, next week or something, what is an average day for you?
It's a good question. The great thing about this job is I don't think there is an average day. But a lot of it is, I would say average day is, I think a lot about internal, external. So obviously we have a 60-person staff. So making sure that every department is aligned, there's a lot of plates spinning at any given time. So a lot of my role, I have amazing people,
sure,
is just kind of making sure that, okay, is marketing aware of this new member service that needs to go out? Is the business development team aligned when the technology is, you know, it's like just keeping, you know, making sure that everything's aligned. We keep a nice, we have a very organized calendar. Everything has to go up by certain dates. So a lot of it's just like checking in and making sure, you know, my job is to get ahead.
Sure.
Like my staff's job is to be the now, I'm to get ahead. So internally, every day I'm just making sure everyone's good, checking temperatures. There's different times a year where different departments have crunch time.
Uh-huh.
So like technology just had a huge crunch time because we have to open registration, we have to open housing.
Sure.
All the links, all the website, all the logins, you know, loading up the servers, scaling up the servers for the traffic, testing. They have to, it's crunch time. So like helping them, making sure they give them space, you know, and then in December, there's a signage deadline where 1,100 signs have to be off to be printed by our deadline. So get them. Marketing.
Yeah.
You know, so like then we have the last payment deadline where finance has to get all the orders. So every department has their like times where I'm trying to just clear, block and tackle, make sure people can be the best they are.
Uh-huh.
That's internal. External, I think a lot about, you know, every day I want to reach out to NAMM members. I talk to someone outside this office every single day, pick up the phone, text, have calls. I just read, you know, the latest issue of Music Inc. magazine. I go and see who's featured, who wrote an article. I send them notes.
Yeah.
You know, being an active face for the industry, posting on my own personal socials, being out there.
Yeah.
So I'd say I spend my days in and out deliberately. And also making sure that, you know, I'm thinking about what we do today is going to be a seed that will grow into something awesome in 2035, you know?
Very good.
So
how often?
That's on the average day. That's a better answer than a bunch of email, right?
Yeah, exactly. How often do you interact with people like Chris Martin or Cesar from Gibson or anybody like that?
Yeah, I had two emails with Chris already today.
Wow.
I talked to Beth Height, the CMO of Gibson, yesterday.
Okay.
I emailed the interim CEO of Gibson yesterday. I had a meeting with Fender today with smart people. So I interact with companies all the time.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's really important that I interact at the executive level. My team's talking to companies all the time. But for me, like I said, interacting with leaders just to check in, because what I get is a sense of like what the industry is going through on a macro level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's super helpful. So I'm quite active in building a network of the leaders of the industry.
Sure. The role of the influencer at the show has seemed to expand quite a bit. Is you think it's going to be growing?
Yeah, I think we're the home of the influencer. You know, it's interesting. A lot of people that were badged as influencers now we can go back and see their like attendance records, even back to like 2016, 17, 18, 19. Uh-huh. But we didn't call them that then. It was like, I have a little YouTube channel or before that,
yeah,
where they were an artist. I mean, everyone, you know, during COVID, everyone was at home. So they were trying to communicate at home. So they popped a microphone and a camera and suddenly they're an influencer. But we see that like that deliberate cultivation influencers, because they're the ones that consumers listen to. Like if consumers are trying to figure out what guitar to buy, they're watching shootouts, they're watching videos, they're seeing what Rick Beato thinks about it.
Absolutely.
Just making sure that we cultivate, like the NAMM show is actually a content creation goldmine for these influencer channels, because not all their followers, like I'd love a million of their followers to come to the NAMM show.
Yeah.
Where we put a million people, but bring it on.
Yeah.
But these people have millions of followers. Those followers want to see what's new and hot and awesome at the NAMM show. So that influencer, you talk about like a, call them like a 10Xer, you know, like someone that's going to like reach 10 times more people than themselves. Some of them are 10,000Xers, you know?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And they have to be. And brands, and that's a new thing. Back to, you talking about, we were talking about booths earlier and like how exhibitors use the NAMM show. The way booths look, is adapting, because you're building a booth for the influencer to capture something, and that's a different setup than like, hey, here's like walking a dealer through, you know. Yeah. So we kind of use this insular kind of meeting room maze in the center with some little product displays. You'd meet your dealer, you'd walk them through, here's the new line, here's the this, let me walk you in the room, would you like a coffee, would you like a beer, we know, you know, I'm not gonna lie. So that's, you know, but like that booth design has adapted to like a lot of external product. Bring the influencer in, check this out. Like, you know, so kind of that hybrid of like, you need to have those B2B experience, but you can't miss the opportunity of someone with a camera that's going to show your product to 100,000 of their followers.
Yeah. Yep. That's true. COVID killed the booth babe.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of the COVID, but also, you know, during COVID, there was a lot of there was a big shift towards just I'm trying to find the right word here. You know, there's a lot of like social morality movements that kind of picked up. And I think a lot of it, you know, obviously the Me Too movement, a lot of like social movements picked up and really shed a light on some things. So I think the idea of exploitation is not something that the next generation tolerates, and it's a more welcoming, family friendly experience.
There, it seems like there are more kids at the show, the past couple shows,
or we just are getting older and everyone looks like it.
Well, I'm a million years older than you. That what led you to bring Josh in as PR?
He's great.
Oh yeah,
Josh has been working with us for just kind of. Josh has been like working with us, well, just doing like PR for other companies too. Yeah. Like he's been sort of a liaison between other companies and us for quite a while.
Yeah.
But as we grew, we brought in Stun Gun Productions to do like PR, and we realized that we needed a new role, which was Josh being able to connect with more brands. As more brands have their own influencer and PR strategy, we realize that like every brand has a PR strategy, and so Josh can actually, you know, basically has a group of like 100 brands that he works with to like make sure like we understand what their artist strategy is, and we can connect the dots. So he's a great dot connector and he's a great thinker. So
excellent. And so outside of NAMM and sailing, what do you do for fun? Do you still play trumpet?
Oh, I wish. You know what? They're sitting over there. Sometimes in the morning, I'll play them a little bit. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you, like, NIMS, I love my job. Like, there's not a moment. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, any CEO job, but any org industry, there's a lot. It's heavy.
Yeah.
But you're just, because your job is to make it, the hard decisions. Like, no, every decision, like I have the most amazing people in the world. You've met everyone that works at NAMM. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Anything that comes to my desk to handle, the smartest, most awesome people of our industry have already, it's gone through a lot of people. And it's, sorry, it's like a, if it was an easy decision, it would have been made already. So, you know, you feel that a lot, and you just have to do the best thing for the most people and do the best thing for the longevity of the industry.
Yeah.
So outside of that, I mean, I love my job. I spend a lot of time at it. when I'm not NAMing, I do. I get on a boat and I go out to Catalina and I just hike and I look at the stars and I have a little Martin Traveler acoustic guitar that I sit on the bow and bang on and play a bunch of songs and just enjoy life. And I think it's that kind of quiet recharge moment. But sailing is my hobby. If I go on vacation, they've been pretty much taking boats out to different places. So it keeps my mind going. The thing about this job is it's fast paced and your mind is always like going. And I can't turn it off. I can't turn off. What I can do is get out in the water and think of like wind direction, other boat, tiller angle, heel, sail trim. You know, and like my mind is, it's my mind is still working, but it's working at something that's not as heavy, you know?
Yeah. What's the most user-friendly port for you?
Oh, you mean on this side of the country?
Either one. I mean, either one.
Here?
Either one.
Long Beach. I mean, I sail out of San Diego, Newport Beach, and Long Beach. To be honest, it's the one that's without the wind. They're all easy without wind and current.
Okay.
Anything you hit at slack tide and low wind, you can put a boat in. It's just when the wind and the current. So, like, you get in like Long Beach, and again, Newport Beach, for example, when you get a big tide shift, you're pulling water through there. And so you're always kind of like, wait, what am I drifting into? So depending on how you're trying to do it, you know, and so to me, it's not as much the port, it's the time of day.
Sure. Have you ever sailed the Napili Coast in Kauai?
I have not. I have not sailed Hawaii.
Okay. All right. All right.
And you know what's funny? Hawaii, I've looked at it. Hawaii doesn't offer bare boat charters. Meaning, like anywhere else in the world, I can get a boat as a boat captain, just like a rental car. Hawaii doesn't let you. You can only go out with like captain charters, local captains.
Okay,
because they don't want bare boat charterers in that area. Like BVI, USVI, Caribbean, Mediterranean. It's like, oh yeah, get a boat, go out, figure it out. But Hawaii doesn't allow it.
Do you think it's because the waves there are so much?
I do think it's because the terrain is special. I do think there's a lot of – it's a tricky environment. It's highly volcanic, so there's areas that are really deep, and then it's suddenly not that deep. I do think it's preservation, to be honest, because they want the resorts. And quite frankly, like every bit of coast that has sand has a resort there. You don't have like – you don't have the kind of open coves that people can just go chang. Like even like La Paz has a lot of that, you know, so –
yeah. And to your left there, what type of Hortons do you have? I mean, they're trumpets, but what brands?
Bach, Schoki, Yamaha. Yeah, I actually have all three. I have a Bach B flat, I have a Yamaha C, and I have a Schoki Piccolo.
And I'm not going to ask you to tell me what your favorite.
Oh, the Piccolo.
No, I said I'm not going to ask you that.
I don't mind. The Piccolo. I used to love like playing Piccolo trumpet when I was in shape.
Yeah, they're right on. And who are your guys as far as trumpet players?
I mean, since we're talking piccolo, it's Maurice André, like the godfather, the French like king of all of that. But I mean, you know, I really, really like in the jazz side, like I really like Lee Morgan, Clifford Brown, like just that like really soulful melodic playing, Miles, it was just like that was a really good like, you know, influences there when you play jazz. I was always, you know, high note nerd. So you get into like Wayne Bergeron, John Faddis. Who's the guy that played with Harry Connick forever? But, you know, those cats.
Yep. John, one last question. How do you pronounce your last name?
Malinczak.
Malinczak. Very good. Well, it's been an honor to speak with you, sir. And I appreciate you spending time on my little podcast. And I look forward to seeing you in January.
Yeah, sounds good. Registration opens September 9th. We'd love any one of your listeners to register, and we're excited to see you in January.
Right on. Thank you, John.
All right, thank you.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend, and I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. We'll be right back.